I'm going to go ahead and just talk. Something I did wrong in relation to this song, so I'm not sure what that was. I think it was only audible on my system. It's clear that the delay is about 90 seconds, so I will just go ahead and dive into what I have to say today. And let's see here. Kind of pissed me off that I can't play the music. I have some different stuff, and frankly, if I never heard Led Zeppelin again, it would be too soon in my life, but to each his own, huh? And I won't guarantee there won't be any niggers or non-whites or Jews in what I play, because I don't know the background of every single person. I don't really care that much about that kind of shit if I like the song. But, of course, in general, it will be white. But enough about that. And, yeah, I was trying to think of a cool name for a radio show, but until I have the particulars nailed down, I don't really see a need for that. Anyhow, I got the thing half-assedly working. Isn't that the way of the world? We kind of muddle through. We kind of get stuff going. And I know that the new semester has just started off, so Dietrich's, you know, he's contending with hapless freshmen and simian sophomores and trying to rope them into line. So he's not around to hold my hand here on this, so I'm gonna have to wing it. Somehow I pushed some of the buttons and got the crap got the stuff right, and let's see. I was listening to myself in the feed. So okay, I've got someone. Okay. So you may hear me talking to my interlocutors on Skype and on other computer stuff. Like I said, if you have any questions about what I'm talking about, you can hit me on Skype at alender5, or you can get on the forum at vnnforum.com, and in the general discussion, I've got a sticky for this thread that I see a couple of people have found. And what I'm going to do is write one little reply in there. So we're going to do without music today. When Dietrich's around later, he'll explain to me what I did wrong. So what I have is my MP3 downloads, and I just double clicked on that. It comes up in the music match under the main feed. But all I'm just hearing it. But it seems like the other day when I did that, it was able to simply play it. Maybe not. I don't know. Here I'm typing. Yeah. Just want to talk. Figure out the. Okay. Now let's see. Okay. And I don't have the. Let's see. Yeah, it's not just Led Zeppelin either. Fuck classic rock. I hate hearing that shit. Most of it's not that good. It should have been left in the 70s. I don't want to hear it now. Doesn't mean I want to hear any rap, hip-hop, or any of that crap either. But, it's pissing me off. I can't play what I want to play on that. But that's just today. Next time I do it, I'll know how to do it. I swear that worked before. Anyhow, it's now, let's see, 2:49 p.m. Wasted about 5 minutes. Wasted about 15 minutes getting onto the technology, and wasted about 4 minutes trying to figure out where I was. Verified that the feed was up and running and you could hear it, and there is the 90-second delay that's built in, but I must have done something not to be able to do the music, so I'm going right to my stories. First story I want to talk about today is Leona Helmsley. And this woman was a Jew. She was a Polish Jew. And let me read a little about the story. Leona Helmsley, dead at 87. Let's see here. Behind the headlines like People Magazine's Greedy, 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 the woman dubbed the Queen of Mean was a lovingly devoted wife to her third husband and a generous philanthropist. It strikes me as just the general reversal of names. I mean, she's called Greedy, Greedy, Greedy and Nasty and Mean, but someone like Rosie O'Donnell at one point was actually called Nice. Even though Rosie O'Donnell, the comedian, was only able to get people to laugh by physically threatening them from up on stage above them and kind of using her bulk to intimidate them into defensive sure, must have done. Very funny, very funny. Good stuff. Did you eat Margaret Cho? Now, let's see. All right. Now, greed, greed, greed. But anyway, even though this woman's a Jew, I like her. And I certainly don't like her because she's a Jew, but I like her because the woman had very high standards. Now, she looked as freaky as anything this side of that, what was her name, Alexandra von Wolfensberg, who had so much plastic surgery she looked like the character in Brazil. But this old bitch was tough, and having standards, being competent at something is, to me, sexy. And you find it in so few women, or even in people proper. Women being more the reproductive pod, I think, than people in the full sense of the word. And there I'm duplicating something Schopenhauer said, just mostly in humor. Mostly. But I think Schopenhauer said somewhere in his book, and I would look here behind me if I had it, but he said what did he say? He said, man is the full creature called man. I mean, but he really didn't like his mother or his sister, and he exchanged jibes with them. And he said something like, you know, because his mom had written a book, too, and I think he had a salon for a while, and they were angry at him because he was into philosophy and writing and didn't like being I think he was some kind of accountant or some kind of financial clerk and just hated it. And, you know, they wanted him to be a lawyer or be an accountant and do something that made money. And, He said to his mom, he said something like, my books will be around long after yours are gone. She's like, of course they will, because no one will buy them. They'll still be sitting there on the shelf. And so he didn't like his mother or his sister. And in fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Schopenhauer's the one who he got into. Some woman was annoying him in the house he lived in, and he ended up, he just picked her up and threw her down the stairs and injured her. And he ended up having to pay something, and he had to pay her a yearly amount for injuring her, I believe. But he didn't like women a great deal. Let's see. But if you get the Penguin collection of some of his aphorisms, is fantastic and repays rereading. And let's see. I want to talk. We're going to talk a little later. We're going to talk about political correctness, which is one of my favorite topics. And I hear a little bird tells me that there's going to be an upcoming movie. I can't say for sure that that's true, but I hear that a very important young auteur is producing a film on political correctness. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. Don't think I'm wrong about this. But we'll get to that a little later, and that's that cur from England, John Derbyshire, has written a piece of utter shit, albeit riddled with some interesting little factlets in American conservative Buchanan's rag. But I'm going to give that a gentle corrective when we get to there. But right now, we're in the part of the show where we praise Leona Helmsley for being competent and caring about shit. People don't get it. They think being lax, you know. The woman ran hotels. She, what does it say here? Together they ran an empire at one time worth $5 billion that included such jewels of the Manhattan skyline as the Empire State Building, the Lincoln Building, One Penn Plaza, and the Park Lane Hotel. And what I liked about her was she made some comment about, we don't tolerate wet lettuce here at whatever. Now that is cool, not to be intolerant of fuck-ups. And that wasn't the only thing she said. A wrinkled bedspread once caused the outburst. The maid's a slob. Get her out of here. Out, out. She berated a waiter who brought a bill to the table without a leather-embossed folder with, find that or you'll be looking for another job. And lawyer Alan Dershowitz recalled how she treated another customer who brought a cup of tea to their breakfast table with a minuscule amount of water spilled in the saucer. She grabbed the cup from me and threw it down, shattering it all over the floor, he said. Then she called the waiter over and told him to get on his hands and knees and plead with her for his job. So you definitely see the Jew in her, but on the other hand, you definitely see a commitment that paid off in the extra solicitude and professional courtesy shown to her customers. That's how you get to the top, by being hyper-competent, not by tolerating incompetence. You understand? And these are the people that we have to beat. This is the cream of the cream of the Jewish community. This is what they produce. This is the way they act. This is the way they think. They're on top. How did they get there? in part by being very, very, very concerned with details. That takes effort. Think about it. Now let's see here. Funny, she was married 4 times. Interesting. But anyway, the other point that it's worth making about her is that she was harped on and hated by, you know, stuff like People magazine. Not for being a Jew, but for being, you know, just an old bitch or an old witch. Kind of the way, well, you know how they treat Paris Hilton now. They, you know, it's open season on her. You can call her what you want. Well, you could do the same to Hemsley, not because she was a Jew, but because she was really rich and she could take it. And this is the thing about a democracy. It's very dangerous because the passions of the people are quickly used by demagogues. And most of the politicians are demagogues. They're used to strip respect and ultimately strip material possessions and finally in the end strip the life from anyone that they train this dog pack on, because the people are a mass of slobs, and agitating the slobs is big business for gutter press such as the New York Post, you know, as well as the stuff in Britain. And that's what they do. So they seize on something, fair or unfair. They'll even put words in your mouth and claim that, you know, she said taxes are for little people. Did she actually say it? I don't know. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. But they'll seize on stuff like that and go after you. So it's easy for me, at least, to have respect for people who are very attentive to detail. And I think that's important for all white nationalists to become better at stuff. That's why stuff like mistakes in spelling is not a minor detail. When you make a mistake in spelling, like you spell lose, L-O-O-S-E, loose, you leave it up there, that has its effect on others. All this stuff propagates and ramifies in ways you don't even know, except you do know that in general terms it's negative. So try to spell stuff correctly. You can't make a team of winners out of people who pay no attention to detail and simply don't have the capacity to. Okay, that's all I want to say about Leona Helmsley. Now I want to talk about, let's see, a couple other things here. Someone says, I just called a Jewess sexy. Not precisely. I wasn't saying that the Jewish aspect of her was sexy. I was saying the attention to detail. And I could go on and on. I don't think now is the time to go off in a certain... applying the insight of attention to detail to sex. Sometime I'll do that, though. Once I have a little better command over what I'm doing, I feel like I can interrupt myself at ease because I got the technology down. But anyway. Let me see here. I also want to talk about... Here's an article I found, and I just made a feed on the main page today, and that's a series of spintros I call a feed, and links to a lot of different stuff. Another one is this article. I'll read a little from this. This is by a famous Jew sociologist called Myron Magnet. And again, he writes for the City Journal. Now, City Journal at city-journal.org. This has become kind of a neocon domestic policy rag. Now, we're used to the neocons coming up with endless lies about Iraq, and we're used to them and the murder and mayhem they cause abroad in the name of us and our foreign policy, which is actually policy that benefits Israel. But they are just as destructive at home, where they produce myriad articles like this one. And City Journal is more of like an extended thought piece type of I guess it's a physical magazine, or it's a quarterly or something, and they have... They would print stuff like Charles Murray, that level of thing, or Myron Magnet here, Robert Nisbet, stuff like that. But it's just as neocons were Jews who were originally communist revolutionaries. That's the milieu they come from, the red diaper babies in the 30s who are the American version of the people who killed the Tsar and instituted the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. They came. The ones who came to the U.S. were called red diaper babies, and they gave birth to the 60s radicals. And from that milieu broke, if you want to use that term, some of the people who became neocons as they saw that the new left was getting wackier and crazier and threatening America's relationship with Israel because they were starting to look at the Palestinians as oppressed, people oppressed by white colonizers and lumping the Palestinians in with the black Africans in the sub-Saharan Africa in their relation to the European colonizers, and the Jews didn't want that. They wanted to make sure that America was always on the side of Israel and stayed anti-communist. So they work it from all different angles. They're the communists in Russia, and they're the people who are supposedly fighting communism here in the U.S. Fact is, the whole way the U.S. was funding and had relationships, all the stuff is interwoven, and the people at the top essentially form a class with one set of interests. Maybe a couple of parties, but one set of interests. And so what I'm trying to get at here is, on the domestic side, we saw the rise of the welfare state in the 60s. Before the 60s and all the various revolutions, and there were more than you would think. It wasn't just that they opened the borders in the 60s. It wasn't just that they gave the blacks civil rights, which gave them more rights than whites. It wasn't just they instituted affirmative action. They also passed measures in terms of GOI control, or gun control, as they call it. They there were any number of other things then, too, and they started getting the feds involved with local education. Back in the early 60s, the feds were not involved with education really at all until under Lyndon B. Johnson, they finally got a couple $1 billion into local education, and now they pretty much dictate down to the jot and tittle what local kids are going to read. And that's one reason we always call for people to remove themselves from public schools. You understand? So, let me just check here to make sure everything's running and cool. Let me know if I'm loud enough or if there's anything technically wrong with this broadcast. And I'm updating. I'm looking at my Skype and I'm looking at the... where are we here? And then we'll... we're going to discuss this Myron Magnet article in a minute. I'm giving you kind of the backdrop here. But right now I'm... let me see here. Okay. Let's see. Okay, someone... Okay, that was 14 minutes ago. Okay. Anyhow, what I've said before is that so-called public discourse in the U.S. is a bunch of Jews nattering at each other. And they may fall under one of 100 different guises, but in the end, they're a bunch of Jews, and that fact overrides everything else. Because Jew 1 may have backing from this institution, Jew 2 has backing from that, Jew 3 is a conservative, Jew 4 is a liberal, Jew 5 is a communist, Jew 6 is a neocon. It's all the same damn thing. It's a bunch of Jews. It's people who don't look or think or act or behave like you and me, who are deciding what our nation does and speaking in our name and bombing people in our name, killing people in our name, causing us to be hated for actions that benefit only them, they think. And that's the deal with the war in Iran. I mean, the war in Iraq and the attempted war in Iran. But, again, I'm straying from my subject here. All right, I'm hearing a good tone and volume. Thanks for letting me know. And let's see. I'm just pissed the music doesn't work because I want to play a couple of different things. Why wouldn't that work? What did I do before? I can't remember what I did. Let me see here. And the thing is, I'm not talking a particularly loud voice, but I'm trying to... The thing with... We use Simplecast, and you can see your levels on the green, yellow, and red. So it should be about right now, but... to mic to stereo mixer. It seemed like I did that before. And what did I do that before? It seemed like to me I just played it. All right. Well, like I said, I'll just ignore that and just keep going. And right now when I'm saying these words is 3:06. There should be a 90-second delay, I believe. What we're going to do is discuss In the Heart of Freedom in Chains by Myron Magnet. Magnet is a Jew. He's been around a long time. The point is, political discourse in the U.S. is largely a bunch of Jews chattering about which are the right decisions to make, and they mean for them, and it's carried out on us. Now, what you get are neocons who broke away, were more anti-communist than other Jews who remained with the New Left. So they were a little more anti-communist, and on a domestic front, they eventually, in the 70s, began to doubt the welfare state and what it was doing. But never, ever, ever would any neocon diverge from the leftist principle that racial integration is morally good and anything else is unthinkable as government policy. So again, you have disagreement between Jews, between the elite who are making decisions that affect our lives, but within very narrow poles, as Pierce would say. You know, yeah, you got free debate, you just don't, you have a free debate between, you know, eating a two different kinds of ice cream cone. I mean, except, you know, the shit flavored or the piss flavored. I mean, it's just stuff you don't want. Bad. You have free debate among bad options. The Jews won't let you have the good options. They're off limits. They're told that that will make you sick or it's evil. You're wrong to want it. We don't want integration. So these Jews who style themselves conservatives and whose thoughts fill the pages of stuff like City Journal, which is one of their main intellectual reviews, it's become such over the last few years, never ever is there anything truly deep. And that's why American Dissident Voices had so many listeners, because Pierce got to the bottom of things. He wasn't satisfied stopping at the top. So Myron Magnet's thing here is to talk about just how nasty rap is, but ultimately what's his explanation? Why it's culture. Culture is the problem. Well, that's straight Boaz. Boaz is the Jew who came over from Germany and who essentially created anthropology, social anthropology, as an academic discipline in the U.S. He was the one who was primarily responsible for spreading the lie that race doesn't matter. In fact, that was claiming that race doesn't even exist. Before he arrived in America in about 1900, American anthropology was physical anthropology. It was dominated by objective study of bones and culture. It wasn't a bunch of lies about cultural relativism, claiming that primitive people in Samoa, for example, to take the Aryan student of one of the acolytes of the mentioned Franz Boas, who spread the lie that, you know, eventually the noble savage and these people are more normal and we're all repressed and evil. I mean, they spread the lie that race doesn't exist in order to empower their own race. And they were the ones putting out the idea that America is not a blood and soil nation. It's a nation of immigrants. Back then they called it polyculturalism, I think. But the intellectual roots of the multiculturalism and the diversity and all this garbage you hear today, some of the terms have changed a little, but the basic idea of mixing in races to make the Jews safe, playing divide and conquer, setting the blacks against the whites, these are all Jewish policies that have been followed as long as they've been in Goyish lands. And they were doing it in Germany back in the Weimar, just as they're doing it here today. Back then they were encouraging, you know, the Francophone areas of Africa. They would, part of the attacks on the White West are having some Francophone troops up there and getting them to mix in with the Germans. Hitler, I believe, complains about that in Mein Kampf. But anyway, so with that much of a preface, let's get down to it and read some of what he says. In the Heart of Freedom in Chains, Myron Magnet, and this is city-journal.org, and Rudolph Giuliani, the WAP vampire bat, says City Journal is the best magazine in America. Oh wait, that's Peggy Noonan who says that. She was the mouthpiece for Reagan, or the one who wrote his speeches. Kind of a dippy broad. But anyway, this has the approval of Mona Charon, who's a Jewish opinion writer. Bill Moyers, who says, even when I disagree with the City Journal, I dare not ignore it. The journal that saved the city, the public interest, that's another neocon intellectual. I read it for years since it first came out, so it's Rudy Giuliani. To me, looks like a vampire bat. Myron Magnet, elite hypocrisy, gangsta culture, and failure in black America. He talks about, he has some good stuff. Now, this part that he's saying is true. The legacy of slavery and racism isn't the reason that blacks are failing in America today. The legacy didn't stop blacks from raising themselves after emancipation. By World War I, Sowell's data, it's Thomas Sowell, show Northern blacks scored higher on armed force tests than Southern whites. After World War II and the GI Bill, black education and income levels rose sharply. It was only in the mid-60s that a century of black progress seemed to make a sudden U-turn, a reversal that long past events didn't cause. Beginning around 1964, the rates of black high school graduation, workforce participation, crime, illegitimacy, and drug use all turned sharply in the wrong direction. While many blacks continued to move forward, a sizable minority solidified into an underclass defined by self-destructive behavior that all but guaranteed failure. What was going on in the mid-60s that could explain such a startling development? Well, of course, we know the truth, and that's what I'll speak here. It's something that he dares not mention. Now, they talked to, as the guest we've had at our forum, Jennifer from the Hartford Advocate, blame welfare and blame perverse incentives. And that's correct. But that only explains a little bit at the margin. The fundamental part of it is that they are not like whites, and to expect them to conform to white behavioral norms is to expect them to be something than other than what they are. It's like expecting a bear to be a sheep, or a sheep to be a pig, or a pig to be a fox. I mean, they're different creatures. Blacks and whites are not the same. And in fact, the irony of it is the only time blacks were ever able to approximate white behavior to even to a degree was when there was really strong racial segregation and what today they denounce as racism. When blacks were looked down upon as inferior people, that was the only time when whites were on top and knew it and were happy about it and asserted their, and really whites being on top is nothing more than whites having their rightful place. That's the only time when blacks dressed and acted like they were white. But ever since we've had a significant presence of Jews in this country, 1880 to 1900, the Jews have started pushing the Marxism that down is good, and that any and the oppressed workers and the top need to look down rather than the down looking up and emulating the top. In a functioning Aryan society, you have all classes working together, and there are class differences, but they don't lead to absolute differences. They might worship in the same church. They feel like they're in the same team. But today, when they've stripped that bare and there's no connection between people but money, the upper class say, fuck you, we're going to import Mexicans and make money for ourselves, and you can go piss up a rope. Your job's going to China. See how you like working at the Dollar Mart for $5 an hour. And that, combined with race mixing, has led to where we are today, where it's utterly, there's no culture. I mean, there's nothing binding Americans together at all other than pursuit of money and sex. That's all we have in common. And television. The telecult, as I've taken to calling it. Well, let's see. And it's funny because this is something I wrote, I think, in one of the spintros I just put up. But you, people always make fun of televangelists, but they only make fun of the proclaimed televangelist. That is the really garish, outlandish Tammy Faye Baker, Jim Baker, Jimmy Swaggart type of evangelist who are overtly doing what they claim they're doing. They're trying to win people for Christ and make a shitload of money doing it. But the more dangerous televangelists are the ones who are putting out a false picture of society. And that's why I call it the telecult. They depict niggers as humans and they force everybody to go along. And this plays into the stuff we're going to talk about later with John Derbyshire and his lengthy but superficial and semitically correct article on political correctness, for which I will provide a welcome corrective. Well, let's see. Anyhow, so he talks about various changes in the 60s, but what Myron Magnin as a Jew never discusses is that Jews were behind all this. All these changes were brought about by Jews and organized Jewish political pressure on the system. And they are the same ones back then who produced those legal changes, produced the cultural changes, such as producing and glorifying and advertising gangster rap and making it cool, even to the extent that it's cool among whites to an extent. Maybe it's dying off some today, but the same basic culture is out there. And he has a long bit. He's talking about the Duke Ray Popes, and he's correctly... This is the thing. A lot of what you say, there's nothing the neocons say. A lot of it's correct and it's factual, but it doesn't penetrate to the core of the problem. It doesn't get to the root. That's the metaphor I prefer to use. It doesn't get to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem, it's not radical Jews, as Michael Jones says. It's just plain Jews. Jews doing what's good for Jews, and that means dividing and conquering by setting race against race. And if you think about that, how would you move into a situation that's more or less settled? Where you got 90% whites, 10% blacks, how would you unsettle that situation to your own advantage? If you think about that from the starting point of, say, 1900, you can come up with what you do, and that's what the Jews did. And part of that is claiming equality, and then anytime there's inequality, blaming white racism and not allowing any explanation for black behavior other than white racism. And driving people crazy, essentially, and forcing them to conform. Again, this is part of what Derbyshire misses. But let's see. Anyway, Magnet's in the City Journal, as I said. Let me see if there's anything more I want to talk about in this article. And he talks a little about black power and cop killer. He recites the familiar litany of cop killer and then killing cops and blacks being real and authentic only when they're shooting people. And again, true, but not the truth. The truth is the races are not compatible. And it's not merely that Magnet disagrees. Magnet and the neocon Jews disagree with that. They never even bring it to the surface, because to do that would be to violate the liberal taboo, and you can never ever suggest that the races would be better off apart. And I called that the parlor trick when I got back into politics in 97 and blackout when I wrote that. I said the parlor trick is arguing the conservative case from the point of view of the black. You know, like, blacks never give a shit about us, or like the Jews give a shit about either race. I mean, but it is a fact, as Thomas Sowell demonstrates in Magnet quotes, that blacks were doing better by all the statistical measures they use before civil rights in 1965. Their families weren't destroyed. Yeah, they were dumber and they were poor, but they were improving over all those decades in the 20th century up until civil rights, which ripped them apart. And that's something a lot of people don't know, but if you had a background in the... a lot of the good conservative stuff that came out in, say, the 80s, you would know that kind of thing. And that's what I grew up reading, so I was aware of that. And then my education was finished by hearing Pierce and the rest of it and getting the actual truth. But no, if we were to argue from the point of view of what's good for blacks, segregation and overt racism was actually better for them than what they have now. It doesn't feel that way to them, but sometimes what you want is not what you need. It's better that blacks be trying to act white than whites being trying to act black. Best of all is that whites run their own nation and they get rid of the Jews who use the niggers to destroy them. That's what we're all about. All about. Okay, let's see. Now. Yeah. Now, there's nothing more to say about the Magnet article, but it's linked to on the front page. Now, we'll talk about Derbyshire, who is a particularly despicable Englishman who was somehow allowed to become an American citizen, much to the disbetterment of our country. Let's see here. I'll probably have to read from some of this in a minute here. Let me see. What do we got? 3:20 here. I'll probably run till about 4 today. And I think Tony's going to come on tonight on the Path to the Truth. Now, again, now what did we just talk about? We had a neocon who was superficial in dealing with race, and much of what he said is right, but it doesn't get to the root, so it will never change anything. Now we have an English guy, John Derbyshire, writing in the Paleocon Rag
Although Derbyshire goes back and forth. He writes for National Review and he writes for the Paleocons also. So he's got his bread buttered on both sides. He's also, I believe, married to a Chinese, so he has no racial stake in anything. And he writes what I would only describe as a Semitically correct article about political correctness that treats it as a matter of... He tries to make a distinction that doesn't really work between soft PC and hard PC, and he treats PC as though it's a matter of manners. But that is not, in fact, what political correctness is. Political correctness refers to deviation from a party line set by communist hardliners. The communists gather together, they have their very top people, and they meet, and they have... I think they call this democratic centralism. They discuss and they come up with the party line on whatever the issue is, no matter how small or big. And once that thing is agreed on and they've taken a position, everybody must ruthlessly follow that line or be stomped out of existence. That's what political correctness is. It's not any kind of manners or morals at all. It's far, far deeper than that. And in fact, Derbyshire never gets anywhere near the heart of it. The heart of it is really... It's an attempt to demoralize men by forcing them to accede in things they know to be lies. Right? You understand that? It forces them to accede in things they know to be lies. So, when you're not allowed to call things what they are, and that has nothing to do with manners or morals, it's just a simple, correct identification of word and reality. When you're not allowed to do that, your senses are degraded, your perception is degraded, your morals are degraded, your body politic is degraded, everything is degraded. You have to be able to live correctly. You have to be able to perceive things and discuss things using the correct terms. So political correctness is an attempt backed by government and television or the telecult and backed by public schools to force everybody to go along with a bogus Jew-empowering conception of the world. So that anybody who departs from this ideology is treated like a wayward cult member. And see, there are very real, for the Englishmen, the English curs, like Derbyshire curs, who refuse to tell you the reality. The fact is, this stuff is backed by law. The same spirit that informs political correctness wrote the laws that constrain employers to do what Jewish communists insist they must. You understand that? When this is taken to the ultimate, there's something in a far better, longer kind of double treatise put together by a good British guy named Frank Ellis. Now, I've referred to this many times. I may just fucking open this and read it. I'll tell you what, people. I may just do that. That would be sassy. And I think entirely appropriate. But I have, you know I'm not a big fan of Monkey Island called Britain. You know that. Not a big fan of the British. I don't think anything too great, apart from inventions, has come off of that lousy island. But, that said, this is one of the good things that's come out of there. And, of course, many of my ancestors came out of there also, so... And they're notably, you know, I have both strains, and the English strain is, they're far more noted for some of the very worst characteristics in American life, which is the fucking moralizing. The moralizing and the hypocrisy are about, you can't really get more British than that. And the servility, as John Kirby sure shows, the incredible servility. The servility of the British people is unbelievable. And that's why the people who basically did the best things, I mean, people like Martin Luther who broke the Catholic Church, they did it, they said, here I stand, I can do no other. It's unthinkable that someone English would do something like that. What the English did to become Protestant was the guy wasn't getting enough pussy, and he wanted some fresh pussy, so he
fuck religion. I'm going to do what I want, and I'm going Protestant. You know, and I mean that that's the island for you. And there is no way out of the situation we're in without following not necessarily a Germanic model, but you have to look at the people who defeated the Jews, who stood up to them, and how they did it. They didn't do it by being polite. They did it by being direct. That doesn't mean crude or evil or rude or anything. It means being direct. It means not giving in on the essential points. It means speaking plainly that these are the people who are running your country. This is what they're doing. Here's what we have to do to fight back and take our country from them. So to me, that is a Germanic approach. And the evasive, code word, polite, eat meat and retreat, kind of act like you're a revolutionary, kind of act like you're a conservative. That crap died with Sam Francis. And the best gift he ever gave to the white race was dying when he did. And because I don't think there's anyone in PaleoCon who's as big as he was. Either way. And so let that fat bastard die and rot. The right way is to, what Pierce said, it's, you know, do right and fear no man. Speak the truth. Don't speak in code words and act like, you know, you got, oh, boo-hoo, you got fired from your super important gig writing, you know, 700 words a couple times a week for the Washington Times and maybe reprinted in three other papers. Big fucking deal. You got to be one or the other. Anyway, you notice how I can't stick to a subject. That's because so many ideas flood into my head. There's so many webs of associations. But this guy did a really great thing. And I'll tell you what, I really love this little monograph, and I've threatened to put this all online. And maybe I'll do that tonight. Maybe I'll do that today and just start reading this all the way damn through. We got a recording of it. But this is a fascinating little thing. And there are many really pungent examples. One involving literal shit that capture the totalitarian essence of the cult driving political correctness, which ultimately stems to the Jew. Although there are certainly non-Jews who are fellow travelers. Hillary Clinton would be a good example. They don't want anybody doing anything that's not government approved. And since they're too stupid to think their way through the ideology, or they are driven by some other motive, like the real hate comes from the people who want to squash all difference in the world because it doesn't redound in their favor. Oh no, people are better looking than me. Oh no, people are smarter than me. Oh no, people have more money than me. Crush them, crush them, crush them. Make everybody agree we're all equal. No, that's the mentality that you find in the whites who go along with the Jews who do it for ethnic reasons rather than ideological reasons. Anyway, I'll read from that a little. Let's start with the Derbyshire first. He says, political, this is just a flat fucking wrong. Political correctness began as a reasonable adjustment of manners, but as an ideology, it corrupts language and dulls thought. No. It didn't begin as an adjustment of manners. It really would be almost better that conservatism didn't exist than that it does exist, because so much of what it says is just like the magnet stuff. It uses stuff that is right, but it doesn't get to the bottom of stuff. And that in itself is part of the problem it's trying to explain. He's writing a politically correct, which Joe Soberman correctly said ought to be Semitically correct, article about political correctness. He's being PC and trying to understand the very phenomenon. You can't do that. If you want to get to the bottom of it, you say, this is Jewish revolutionaries come up with terms and labels for the good guys and the bad guys, and you goddamn well better use them or you're going to be fired. Or you're going to have lead fired into you, as in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe and in China and in other places. And that's the bottom line. It has nothing to do with manners. The left is as unmannerly as it's possible to get. The left brought in the slob culture, right, and said that the bottom shall be top. You can see that it had a good basis to start from with Jeebu, who's down there in the gutter with the whores and the scum, and that's where he made his converts. So you see that Jesus was that same type. I mean, whether Jesus is... I think he's just a literary figure. I don't really believe he ever existed. But in literature, he's the same type as all these other Jews. He's down there with the rabble and the scum, and those are the good guys. And anyone who's rich or cultured or has anything on the ball, well, he's bad. He'll never get into heaven. So the origin of political correctness, it traces back to communist Jews and their absolute unwillingness to tolerate any deviation from the party line. Okay, that's the root of political correctness. It had nothing to do with goddamn manners. Now, this is a pretty long article. And again, I've linked to this in the front page stuff that I loaded before we started the radio today. So, okay, he starts by bitching about the term human-made instead of man-made. All right. Stone Age. Yeah, he harks back to other different things. And he goes back into ancient British history and is talking about the Society for the Reformation of Manners. I mean, that's not related to political correctness. It has nothing to do with that. PC is the realization of this need for a new decorum. It has intellectual roots. No. And like all these cowards, and he is an admitted coward because he said that he was afraid to criticize Jews in an interview with the people at Juicy, which is yet another, oh, aren't Hebes cool and hip website, like the guys who publish Hebe magazine. But he says, you know, he calls Jews Germans as usual, as all these cowards do. Traceable back through the critical theory of the 30s via Marx of the 19th century German. Oh, the 19th century German. Not the 20th century Jewish communists. Wrong. He has some stuff on the differences. This stuff is not bad. On the different usages in Britain versus America. He says, British schoolboys in the 1950s used to chuckle at Americanisms like back of for behind, rooster for cock, chickadee for tit, rock for stone, and pocketbook for purse. Now that's good stuff. That's interesting. And that, but that's not really political correctness. That's more in the way of euphemism as the, and again, I think that's traceable to Britain too, because that's the hypocrisy and the smugness and the snobbery and the delight, the absolute delight in euphemism and pretentiousness. If those aren't British, I don't know where else you would attribute those features of American life. I mean, read Paul Fussell, his book Class, one of the best books I've ever read, and that will explain that type of thing. That type of stuff is not politically correct. It's these hair-flipping jerks, middle-class jerks, who think they're being really cool because they think it's nicer, you know, and they love these, they love certain adjectives over others, and they think it elevates them when it doesn't. But that's not the same thing as political correctness, though. But, let's see, what else do we have here? So he's confusing a couple of different things, but use of euphemism is not political correctness. It relates to it only in the sense that there's always been in America kind of a tension between the way that you elevate yourself socially, and Jim Goad talks about this in the Redneck Manifesto. You elevate yourself from the hillbillies and the rednecks through your adoption of this ideology that insists that, you know, the backwoods people are hicks and white trash, whereas you are different. And that's not wholly Jewish in origin, but much as with attenuated, softened, feminized Christianity in the 19th century, it kind of left the reins lying there for the influxing Jews around the turn of the 20th century to pick up and lead that horse in the particular direction they wanted it to go. So existing social prejudice was channeled by the Kikes into Jew-profitable directions. So they could take that, oh, you know, we're a little cooler, we're not,
we're not hicks, and add on the, you know, we're not racist like those little town hicks or those backwoods hicks. And you see that a lot even out here. You see that local gentry will think that they're elevated because they have different prejudices than the common folks do. And it's a little bit of the limousine liberal thing, but it's also, no one's as naive as people from the country who go off to college and think that they're elevating themselves from their rural cousins because they get this wonderful knowledge poured into them. Well, it's just a bunch of horse shit. If you know the people who are preaching it and you know what they're doing, you understand that, but most of them don't. And that's how they've come to take over the academy, in part. But he quotes Confucius, and to me this is pretty self-evident. Orwell says the same kind of thing. But he says, Confucius was, I believe, the first to assert that if you get the language right, all else will follow. If names be not correct, quote, language is not in accordance with the truth of things. If language be not in accordance with the truth of things, affairs cannot be carried on to success. When affairs cannot be carried on to success, etc., etc. So yeah, that's, and you can see that the Chinese think more like the whites do than the Jews do. The Jews would be, you know, languages is there to deceive people, to help you in business and politics. The Aryan would say, well, you have to get the words. Look, any kind of verbal, even with good intentions, reality is somewhat difficult. It's inherently somewhat difficult to communicate things about reality, even if you're honestly intentioned it. That is, trying to do it correctly. So when you add in the Jewiness into the mix, a deliberate attempt to falsify it, how much worse it becomes. So what the Jews do when they take power is try to, they don't try, they do. They concoct their words for everything. And it's not just a small handful of words. It's anything that rises to the level of what they call issue, even the term issue itself. They either load terms or devise terms or choose terms that will further their case and damage yours. And they make the split that they are the good guys and you are evil. And there's never any middle ground. You either support fags or you're a homophobe. You either support niggerized integration with 100 white rapes a day and 40,000, you know, murders over a few decades, or you're racist. There's no middle ground. There's no ground for anyone. And this is what the conservatives, who are set up as a kind of false, or at least today they're operated as a false opposition to this reigning totalitarian group of dogmatics, their pretension is that, you know, oh, you can't argue your way out of it because they've chosen the terms and they control the high points. They're going to put out their terms 24 hours a day over the telecult. And the television that serves the telecult. And they're going to create this telecult, which a racial cult of personality in which Jews are these noble, you know, but persecuted people, and niggers are noble sports heroes and wise leaders and brilliant scientists and great politicians. They create this reality. They choose the terms that are used to discuss things, the arguments that are acceptable, and they simply don't allow for any other reality. Their telereality crowds out real reality. It doesn't crowd it out, but it prevents certain street-level obvious problems from being dealt with because you're denied even the terms you could use to discuss it. There is no term for the hatred Jews have for whites other than my own term, Loxism. So how can you... when the obvious motive behind these domestic policies is Jewish hatred of whites, an attempt to despoil them and downgrade them and reduce them to slavery, how can you discuss that when there's no term for Jews hating whites? And yet there's a designer term for whites hating Jews. So what they do as best they can is preclude people from even having the terms to discuss what they're doing. And that's what political correctness is. It's ruthless suppression of any dissent. You better use the terms we say. You better use the arguments we say. You better reach the conclusions we reach. And there ain't no room for any discussion or anything else. No room for opposition. And they have that enforced everywhere along the line to the point where someone like Winkler, even some dumb woman,
can realize, hey, I can just shoot my husband and then claim he abused me. He made me wear high heels when we were having sex and get off with 67 days. That's how far the totalitarianism has gone. You just need to mouth, oh, yeah, you know, 400 years of slavery, 400 years of slavery. How routinely the Jewish comedians use that to trump any claim whites might seem to have against blacks. And remember, like I said, they're raping 100 white women a day. 6% of the population is black males, and they're committing more than half the murders and rapes. Why do we need... We don't need them. Whoever gets on TV and says, well, why don't we just separate the races? Just get a no-fault divorce. You know, the what I said in Knoxville. I mean, it's not working out. Can't get along with the niggers. We don't need them. Let's just separate. Let them go their own way. It's not like they like us. Can't do that. Unthinkable. No one would talk about it. You're morally evil if you even suggest it. So they've... Political correctness is much deeper and more threatening and extreme than this English cur, Derbyshire, makes it seem. It's communist totalitarianism. It's not some fucking manners reform. So he's not only conflating certain things, he's deliberately omitting facts that he knows, that it traces back to Lenin and Trotsky, and it refers to departure from the party line. So we must know this. Now let's keep going down the article. Okay, he says there are at least four areas in which the apparent internalization of PC cant has been particularly poisonous: education, immigration, law enforcement, and war. Okay, No Child Left Behind, he talks about. Sissification of the schools. Language of education, even more punctiliously PC than that of society at large. Yeah, okay, that's true, but why is that? Why is that? Why is that? Why is it that the conservatives never answer the why? Why do they never give you the why? Why do they only bitch about manifestations and then retreat to their drawing rooms? Or their snifters of brandy? Why is that? It's because they're just bitching, essentially. They're like old, fat old male tomcats that are gelded, you know, and they rub their belly and they might go, meh. But, you know, they run right back to you the minute you let them off. They're just bitches. They're not ever going to change anything. Fact is, you know, he can break it however he wants, and PC is bad here, here. No, PC pervades, the whole point about it is totalitarian. It pervades every aspect of society. There's no aspect of society that is untouched. And if you think there is, you've swallowed some liberal default assumption that prevents you from understanding the degree to which it has been politically corrected. Oh, you're to use this, and it's like you have your clothes laid out for you, and you're only allowed to wear this, and you're like, this is really ugly, and it's 15 sizes too small, and I don't like... Tough shit, man. That's what you're going to wear. This is the only language you can use to describe reality. And if you think otherwise, you better do it in private with your wife when it's dark, or we're going to throw you in jail if you try to do it in public. Is any kind of a public figure, we're going to hound you from your job. Do it for a private job, we'll get you fired. Do it on the public airwaves, well, you get one chance to do that, and then you're gone. This is totalitarianism. It's not... Why discuss something if you're not getting to the root of the damn problem? The root of the problem is Jews control our country. They choose what language we use. They make up most of the speakers. And then in our national discussions, they own most of the media outlets. They employ most of the talking heads. They are about half the talking heads. They are about half the writers in these publications, and they are most of the owners. They are most of the lawyers, or at least half of them, at these elite law schools. They're the ones who are defining our society and our world to us and presenting it to us in the form of a cult to which we must subscribe, even though it's to our own, not merely detriment, but genocidal detriment. It will get us killed. It's so unreal. And this clown, who's one of their contemptible stooges, affects to write about this system without ever mentioning the roots or just how deep it is and how threatening and literally genocidal. What does he care? He's married to some chink.
So and then he tops it off with some bilge about the coming PC crack up. PC was a response to great social change. No, that's not correct. It has not been all bad. Some softening of manners toward other races and towards homosexuals was proper. So is a fair recognition of the rights and abilities of women. We needed a new decorum. That has nothing to do with political correctness. Not all systems of decorum are equal, though. The PC I've been talking about, the weak PC of speech and manners, has a deep flaw which probably renders the new decorum unstable. The flaw is that strong PC, the ideology underpinning weak PC, is premised on false... First of all, they're the same thing. People are running the country, and they are enforcing policies, and they are depicting, they are characterizing those policies in certain words, and some of their policies are that you will only use this and this language, and they're insisting on it. So they're, you know, it's like pretending that the leaves are somehow different from the trunk or the roots. They're all part of the same goddamn thing. Okay? The fact... Ordinary people don't understand that. They just understand, well, you're not supposed to say this or this. They don't understand who made it that way, that you're not allowed to do that, that there are very real-world repercussions for breaking these rules. Much less do they understand the ends to which these rules are intended to conduce. Understand? That's why we're doing this radio show, to explain this kind of thing to you. The Jews control America. They're the major donor to both parties. They are the reason we're at war in Iraq. They're the reason your son got killed over there. They're the reason your other son might get killed in Iran if they have their way. They have no respect for you. This shows up in their language. And another thing that Derbyshire never bothers to mention is this. At the same time, he's talking about the softening of racial discourse. Why, you can't turn on TV without hearing of white trash. Every single channel, white trash, redneck, trailer trash, Euro trash. You're perfectly free to trash whites. At the very least, that's an interesting thing that he never goes into. So the language that he's talking about, morals and sensitivity, well, hey, Kirby, sure, whites are the majority in America. And if the majority is treated with respect, how can you at all come up with a new decorum from that? If anything, it'd be less decorous. In the old days, people used to refer to niggers. The fact is, niggers exist. Not acknowledge and acknowledging that niggers exist is not unfriendly to niggers. It's simply fact. But now these people trash whites, and they do it indiscriminately for no reason. So there's more indecorum than there ever was before, and the decorum is curiously one way. Whenever you speak of niggers, you'll use the current Jew approved euphemism, the one that is custom designed to fit in with the telecult practice of pretending that niggers are full and equal human beings to whites, even though everybody knows that's not the case. I know, so when Derbyshire elsewhere in the article is talking about freedom, he's making a fool of himself. But again, he's just a stooge who is serving the Jewish interest in writing about political correctness, as though it has everything to do with manners and nothing to do with the Semites who instituted it. So I think it's about time we abandon this piece of shit named Derbyshire and his article, linked to on the front page, as I said. We go to something better, and that something better is Marxism, Multiculturalism, and Free Speech, which is a monograph by Frank Ellis. It includes two pieces. The first we'll leave alone. It's kind of about a couple reports in Britain that are ridiculous. The Parekh and McPherson reports, Deconstruction of the United Kingdom. There is much good stuff in there, but we will focus on the other three chapters. Let's look into chapter 3, Political Correctness and Ideological Struggle. And I'd like to thank whoever sent this to me. I think it was Scott Townsend Publishers in Washington, D.C., and they're at scott-townsend, TOWNSEND.com. Yeah, they you can buy their stuff online there also. But this is wonderful, wonderful history of political correctness, and they talk about some of its applications and how far this shit can ultimately go. And like I said, I'd like to repeat what I said at the top, which is that what they're trying to do is force you. They don't only want you to comply; they want you to love Big Brother. They want to brainwash you. They want you to be like Padilla, who now apparently likes George Bush after they've tortured him
and really beat the hell out of him for years. Now he loves George, just like in 1984. He finally loved Big Brother. Wasn't that how that ended? It's not enough that you comply. You must love them. You must go along with them. You must agree with them. Now, there's so much good stuff in here, I can pretty much pick this at random and start reading. And I think that I mean, this is great. Here, God, I'm just going to read, and as things strike me, I will comment on them. Reading from page 58 of chapter 3 of Marxism, Multiculturalism, and Free Speech by Frank Ellis, who's a good British guy, unlike Kirby Scharr, who's a cur. Frank Ellis, again, and he was, I believe, forced into early retirement or outed and fined or something. I think University of Leeds is where he was. And this said, the introduction says, Frank Ellis is preeminently a scholar, an expert on the Soviet Union and its Marxist-Leninist ideology. This is the stuff of a real college education. He's a member of the faculty in the Department of Russian and Slavonic Studies at Leeds University in the United Kingdom. I don't think that's the case any longer. I think he was either going to give a lecture, for some reason the commies started bitching about him over there for being politically incorrect, and I think he left, but I might be wrong about that. Let's see what they say. I'll read a little more of the introduction. But his is not a detached, effete scholarship. His voice is impassioned and informed by his scholarship. He stands unabashedly for the England that is known to history and that now lies under the incubus of an alien thought control that dominates the West today. Now, that's more like it. Now, those are some words worth reading. The incubus of which we speak takes the form of a smothering cloud of ideology that insists entirely on its own prerogative to speak, barring quite militantly any opposing view, no matter how well considered. Now, isn't that just exactly what I've been saying? They want to set all the terms, and anybody who disagrees with them, they want to stamp out of existence. In the communist country, they literally shot him. Here, they don't do that today. They just drive you off your server. They try to get you fired from your job. They'll only kill you as the final recourse. It is in this context that we find Frank Ellis threatened today by the most strenuous efforts to silence his voice. Leftist student demonstrations have demanded that he be dismissed because in off-campus writings he has expressed opinions that oppose Marxism and multiculturalism and the suppression of free speech in present-day Britain and Europe. He is a man of great courage, and it would be easy to speak of him as potentially a martyr on behalf of the England that was. That would not be inappropriate, but in doing so would obscure perhaps a larger truth, that it is England, the United Kingdom, and the West in general that is being martyred, not simply one man. Quite true. We face exactly the same threat from here to the Antipodes. The Antipodes being Oz, being Van Diemen's Land, being Australia. Same forces at work everywhere you find white majorities. You've got a Jew trying to wreck their nations with this ideology, departure from which they will not allow to the extent they can prevent it. So we're all in this together. I'll leave that alone. I'll go back to chapter 3, and I'm going to read you a little selection here and comment as I feel appropriate. We're looking about 3:54 right now, so I'm probably going to run till about 4:15. Although this stuff gets me fired up and very excited. Lenin reaffirmed his... And again, I don't know Russian. I know the Cyrillic alphabet a little bit, but I don't know some of the pronunciation of this. But Lenin refined his position on Partainost. Partiinost. Lenin refined his position on Partainost in What is to be Done? Was tun? What is to be done? And in the influential article Party Organization and Party Literature. In its revolutionary, communist, or political forms, Partainost went beyond being merely politically correct and was elevated to the realm of science. Now, this should not be taken as an appeal to discredited bourgeois notions of objectivity, but should instead be seen as being based on a higher form of rational thinking, that of class consciousness or soznani. The ideology of class makes possible a new powerful mechanism for interpreting the world, scientific socialism no less. So basically, what I know he says in other parts here, the point is, they create their version of this is how the world should be, and you must act in conformance with that, especially if you're inside the party, and you would crush everybody on the outside. The world's supposed to be like this, Just, I insist, it's like this. In reality, it's not like that, so you have to crush anything that gets in the way. So that's the underlying drive here. Let's see. Science and scientific method, as it had evolved since Newton, could not escape the need for a correct understanding of the world, one that was congenial to Marxism-Leninism. Where science clashed with Marxist-Leninist ideology, as it frequently did in the course of the 20th century, then scientists were expected to confess to errors and recant, or were arrested. Lysenkoism was one of the better-known communist witch hunts against scientists who presented or implied conclusions contrary to Marxist-Leninist orthodoxy. So, fuck reality, we're going with our ideology. And if you say otherwise, you better goddamn well recant, or we're going to stick you up against the wall, and we're going to shoot you. We're going to splatter your guts for finding that reality is out of line with what Lenin says. Liberated from the burden of proof, Lenin and his successors were allowed to claim superior insight. The consequences were profound. By insisting on party unity at all costs and instilling fear of factionalism, Lenin made serious intellectual discussion impossible. Absolute theoretical certainty, or rather the belief that the party had uncovered the laws of historical progress, justified all means necessary to bring about the new society. To quote Valentin Turchin, society is either structured correctly, i.e. in accordance with the laws of nature, or, quote, incorrectly, i.e. in the contravention of them. In the latter case, society must be ruthlessly destroyed, then rebuilt. And if you think, this is not specifically a Jewish thing. Now, it does serve Jewish ends, and Ellis doesn't talk about those overly, but the mindset he here describes, you will find in your college liberals. And that's the anger, the hatred, and the fear with which they regard anybody who says, well, you know, I just happen to observe that this is how blacks actually act. And they can't legally kill you, but short of that, they will do everything they can to smear and attack and destroy, assassinate your character. And it wasn't just Jews. It was Jews who set this in motion and who defined the terms and et cetera, but the mentality, a lot of goys have that. Or can be led to it, and we certainly see that in the U.S., as they saw it in the Soviet Union. E. Michael Jones goes into a lot of that, and another time I'll dig up what he said about some of the first, when these crazy doctrines that the leftists have, these anti-reality doctrines were first put into practice. E. Michael Jones has a lot of good anecdotal stuff, not just about Weimar Germany, but about the actual Soviet Union right around 1919 when they tried free love and they tried socialist economics and it all fell apart. Looking around for that book, I don't see it, but I got it here. But anyway, that's for another time, but we'll keep going a little bit longer here now. Let's see. Consistent with the creation of a revolutionary elite to guide the masses, great emphasis in Lenin's writing is attached to ensuring that the right people work in the party press. Right, the right people work in the party press, and that they be thoroughly well versed in Leninist thought. Right people, thoroughly versed in Leninist thought, and they have an intuitive understanding of what is politically / ideologically correct. Now, you think about the crappy newspapers you read on the newsstand today that you can buy, and doesn't that describe it? There's a fucking party line. What have I said? You fight the reporter for the story. Because the reporter's not there to tell stories. The reporter's there to push a damn agenda. And the reporter always pushes the same agenda and always pushes that agenda in the exact same terms until a memo comes down from headquarters at the New York Times to shift the terms. So that's how, from day to day, as quick as a school of fish changes direction, you go from illegal alien to undocumented worker. How do they all turn at the same time? Like fish. Unless they are following an agenda and somebody is choosing their arguments and their terms. to call that a free press is to make a mockery of the concept. If America is a democracy and America has a free press and most white Americans are racist, then where do I go to buy a racist paper? Good question. Can't answer it. Pravilnost informs all aspects of publishing. Pravilnost. 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 Pravilnost informs all aspects of publishing. P-R-A-V-I-L apostrophe N-O-S-T. Pravilnost. Informs all aspects of publishing. Russian's so much more interesting when you don't actually know it. And the Pravilnost informs all aspects of publishing and the dissemination of ideas, particularly translations of foreign literature, which carries a heightened risk of ideological deviation. To this end, notes Kunitsyn, our party supports among the flood of publications that which helps the correct understanding of life. That's from Kunitsyn in 1971. Again, our party supports among the flood of publications that which helps the correct understanding of life. We are warned that not all authors can be relied upon to provide a correct understanding of class character. And in the long term, writes Kunitsyn, the correct education of authors acquired a much bigger role. Lenin, we are also assured, believed that the workers, confronted with a Marxist explanation of any complicated situation, would correctly understand, and he, Lenin, showed such boundless punctiliousness in correcting errors which had been made in the party press, period. Point there is, Lenin showed boundless punctiliousness in correcting errors. So this is the thing. Political correctness is a very hair-splitting. Not just, it's a blood-shedding, hair-splitting insistence that you obey the party line. And it begins with the party insiders. Because remember, Trotsky got an ice pick through the head. But it ends with the entire world. These suckers want a global revolution. They want a new world order, which the commies, who are mostly Jews, are running things, and there's no deviation allowed from their party line, even though it's totally anti-reality. Okay? Lenin was also concerned, quote, about the correct implementation. Now, what Ellis is doing here is emphasizing the use of correct, correct, correct. All these sentences have correct in them. Lenin was also concerned, quote, about the correct implementation. Well, he's quoting someone talking about Lenin. The correct implementation of revolutionary principles in the press. Again, Kunitsyn, 1971. And revolutionary struggle and its interest required a correct, fundamentally scientific reflection of them in the press. And just to further confuse things, they're calling, there was, when socialism began, you had, you know, Robert Owen, and you had utopian socialists who'd try to create their little communes, but Lenin sought to distinguish them by making them scientific. So it's not just that they're going against actual science, which is used rationally to discover facts about objective reality. It's that they're calling their little fantasy, promoted over the telecult, at least today, if not in Lenin's time so much, they're calling their own fantasy science. So, as is typical of the Jew, if the commie ain't a Jew, it's nothing. They flip reality on its head. They arrogate, look it up if you don't know what it means, arrogate all the good words to their service of their cause. And for us, we suck hind tit, we get nothing, we're haters, we're extremists. When the people who mix the races resulting in 100 white women a day, they're the good guys. We who resent that and don't want it are the extremists. But when white and black were apart, there were not 40,000 rapes a year of white women by blacks. So you're an extremist if you don't want white women to be raped by niggers. And you're a good guy if you want
European American women to commingle with African Americans. You understand? The point here is that political correctness that English piece of shit John Derbyshire, who admits he is a servile cur for the Jew in order to put bread in his table for his chink wife and his ratty little kids. The point here is that he is serving people who are the lineal, the blood, and the ideological direct relatives of the communist who instituted the greatest terror ever seen in the history of mankind. That is, the communist system still operates today, and the whites are still the victims, and the Jews are still the operators of that system. And the fact that there are white people who serve the Jews, either semi-unwillingly, like Kirbyshire, out of gutlessness and self-interest, or because they actually believe the same shit themselves, like Hillary Clinton, doesn't hide the fact that, in Churchill's term, the Jews are the driving power behind the juvenile delinquency, the malicious arrested development, and the demands for impossible equality that motivate the goddamn commies. The Jews are the driving power behind the communists. That means, Churchill said it in 1920, 1919, same thing today. The Jews are the ones dreaming up probably 90% of the terms and choosing 100% of the terms and the arguments and the frames that are allowed in the so-called mainstream press, what I call the junk media, the bad faith media. Well, it's not operated in bad faith. It's operated in bad faith if you assume that Aryans are operating it and they're just mistaken, or they're being deliberately crooked. They're not. They're operating to serve Jewish ends. Jewish ends are communist ends. They will be the regnant top class. The rest of mankind will be slaves on a global plantation, unable to resist for technical reasons, due to the incredible power of projected military force seen in our Air Force that can bomb anywhere on Earth and destroy it in a matter of minutes. Future's looking bright. Let's see here. This insistence, and again, now we're talking about Lenin, who was a quarter Jewish himself. He was Jewish enough to be a citizen of Israel, because Israel goes by blood laws. And matrilineally, he was descended from Jews, so he qualifies. The insistence on the link between correct thinking, and what I want you to do, you think about the parallels between Lenin's time and today. Remember, this is not even 100 years ago. The same fucking people literally knew each other. It's carried on. They have this tradition. They found what works. It's evil. It's violent. It's vicious. It's horrible. But it works. And like the SPLC said, criticizing McDonald and celebrating the fact that he's denied teaching a certain lower level classes today at Long Beach, even though he's a tenured professor. Hey man, whatever works. SPLC doesn't care. They're happy to see people killed. Happy to see it. Smeared, killed. Hey man, whatever works. That's always been the leftist philosophy. Rights, morality, those have nothing to do with power. Power is exercised. If liars want to exercise power, most people are not disposed to be liars on a scale large enough to take over nations and fuck everybody up. They don't have that inherent. All they want is a little more for themselves than what they got. People who are a weird, freaky minority like fags or Jews have to control the media. I've said, Jews are the only people who control the media or have to. Why do they have to? They have to because their group interest is at odds with the interest of the bulk of the population, and the bulk of the population cannot be allowed to see that. Right? Beauty of the internet. It allows people who understand that, like me, to tell people who are growing, who need to hear it, this is what's actually going on. And together, we all, me and you listening, we form a new head and we lead our body of our people in a different direction than the Jews would shepherd us. Right? All right, back to the text. This insistence on the link between correct thinking and writing means that journalism and writing become the collective responsibility of the party. It is expressed in one of Lenin's most oft-quoted lines. The newspaper is not only a collective propagandist and collective agitator, it is also a collective organizer. The paper was intended to educate the masses politically, preparing them under the guidance of the party for the day of revolution. Now remember, this is back when Lenin's saying this. The only reason he's saying newspaper is because TV wasn't around yet, or it was just getting started, and even radio I don't think was around all that much. Maybe it was. Right, radio too is just getting started. So, with this end in mind, Lenin insisted on he's setting these apart as terms, if not quoting them directly, the correct supply of material for the paper, again, on its correct dissemination. So you're talking about very tight jot and titular control at that level, down to individual letters, of what the people see and hear, in order that they be raised up correctly. That's where political correctness comes from. It's a communist concept. It's a Jewish communist concept. Judeo-Bolshevismus, as the Nazis said. Judeo-Bolshevism. Right? That's the enemy. Churchill said, Jews are the driving power behind communism. Its demands for impossible equality. Its arrested development of the people pushing it. And we've all seen these angry, noxious kikes. Arrogant, yet stupid for all their high IQ. I mean, what? Neocon. Say it in one word in 2007, neocon. Malicious. Malicious envy. Hatred of other people. Jew, 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 it screams. Jewish communism is what we must free ourselves of. As a later official Soviet source makes clear, one of the tasks of party propaganda is to elucidate for the benefit of the working masses the correctness of the party's policy. Pravilnost politiki partii, and the need to implement it. So again, brainwash, browbeat, indoctrinate, over and over and over and over, successive waves of propaganda coming at you from every direction. Whether you pick up a newspaper, whether you turn on the radio, whether you sign on to the telecult. Same thing coming at you from every direction. From down below like a killer shark in the ocean. From up above like an American F-15 bombing the fuck out of your village. The same damn thing coming at you till you don't know which way to turn. Reality doesn't really seem like what I'm hearing, but I better keep that thought in my head, because I'm probably the only one who really thinks that way. You're not, but they don't want you to know that. All right, 2 more minutes, I'm going to wrap it up, because we got another radio show coming on tonight. But, I love this book. I love it. The cool thing about it, great books should never be long. They should always be short. This thing is 107 pages. There's one specific thing in here I remember, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to locate it right now. But this is such good stuff, and I hope you're enjoying... Not enjoying. I hope you're getting some benefit from me reading it, and although it's very clear, helping to explain to you what's going on and translate this into 2007 here from, 1907 Lenin, or whatever it was, 1920 Lenin. Free and open discussion, which existed in the West, represented the greatest threat to Lenin's arrogation of intellectual infallibility. You see, so here's this Jew saying, no, we don't want free speech. We're going to tell you what's what in every particular, so that there's no space outside the state. There's no ideas that aren't state-sponsored and state-allowed. And anybody who says otherwise, well, we have a bullet for you. 2 points can be noted. First, a free press protected in law cannot be easily manipulated. And Lenin can, of course, be attacked with impunity. Journalists will resist control by a small group of individuals. Lenin's party, for example. Second, the very lack of centralized control means that the concentrated essence of ideology, deemed by Lenin to be a precondition for pursuit and consolidation of power, will not be achieved. So here we have
centralization of power is a very Jewish concept. They're a tiny minority. They have to centralize things, whether that's the media or anything else. To get the effect they need, it has to be centralized. If you have a decentralized press and you have decentralized politics, then people control themselves, like in Switzerland, where every man has a full automatic weapon, and they live in cantons, and they have a weak federal government, but they have strong individual, they call them cantons. That's the Aryan ideal. That's how Aryans ought to live when we're at our best. But a significant minority of Aryans sees the benefits in centralized power. And I've lived out in D.C. and seen it, and everybody, you're a consultant, and you get really excited because, my buddy who's on the Senate committee, they're going to stick in this rider in this bill or whatever, and they're going to, throw in $5 million for this or that pork, and ooh, I'm going to get my piece of that. So Aryans, the scummier, dirtier, but more aggressive Aryans, are going to side with the Jews and like, hey, yeah, boy, I see what's possible. If we centralize all political power in D.C., even though it makes no rational sense, it sure as hell serves my interests. Fuck the country, man. I want to get rich. So this kind of people flocks around the Jews once they've controlled the media. They're able to take all that power to D.C. and do what they want through executive dictatorship. The same people are always denouncing Hitler and whatever. Even though Germany's only about as big as a couple of our states, and it makes a little more central. It makes more sense to have a government running it there, perhaps, than it would here, where it's very spread out. Because it's easier to know the local conditions when they're not that far apart. But you see what I'm saying. But anyway, the communist idea is to take all control, to be absolutely dogmatic in your party line, and to allow absolutely no deviation from it among your ranks or in the media. And anyway, so if you do have the different organs in the free press, this leads to heterodoxy, ideological deviation, and the debasement of the medium for less serious purposes, i.e. entertainment, sensationalism, tabloid journalism, for example, rather than ideological instruction and repetitive browbeating. Nevertheless, Lenin argues that within the party, free speech and the freedom of the press must be total, subject to the caveat that the party reserves the right to expel those who propagate anti-party views. Regarding the procedure to be adopted for ascertaining anti-party views, Lenin makes the following point. The party's program, the party's tactical resolutions and its code, and finally the entire experience of international social democracy, of international voluntary alliances of the proletariat, good Lord, this is thick, which while constantly incorporating into their party's individual elements or trends, which are not entirely consistent Marxist or correct, but additionally constantly initiating periodic purges of their party, shall serve to determine the line separating party views from anti-party ones. So in some concession to reality, they do allow free speech within the party, but once they've made up their mind on something, that's it. And like I said, I think that's called democratic centralism, but that's more among the party elect. But they do have a party line, and they're not allowing any deviation from it. But I guess when they're trying to figure out what to do, they allow some discussion among certain people. So the party, in order that it preserve orthodoxy, must resort to periodic purges of incorrect elements whose incorrect status shall be determined by the party elite, in accordance with the doctrine of democratic centralism. Now here he's talking about, Lenin provides an ideological justification for terror against the party itself and against any opposition to the party from outside. In such apparently innocuous theoretical beginning, we find the genesis of communist terror, which has had truly catastrophic consequences in the 20th century. Terror itself is politically correct. Harsh administrative measures to eradicate factionalism from party ranks were stepped up after 1917. Demonstrations of ideological orthodoxy became crucial for survival. Evidence of the party's determination to root out factionalism and other heresies can be seen at the 10th Party Congress in 1921. And it goes on and on, but we'll leave that right there. And we will come back on future broadcasts. We'll come back to this piece of work called Marxism, Multiculturalism, and Free Speech. And we will point out, and some of his most dramatic examples are in China, where these little, literal-minded gooks are taking this stuff and forcing people to suck shit out of
through straws out of pails because they're bad and they refuse to be brainwashed and become, you know, new men who love Big Brother, Big Slant-Eyed Brother. But wonderful, I guess you'd call it a little four-chapter monograph talking about political correctness in Britain and also the Soviet experts, and it's done by a Slavonic and Russian expert, Frank Ellis, out of Leeds University, at least at one point. Great, great stuff. Again, that's at scott-townsend.com. This is my initial broadcast. I don't know how to operate the music yet. I'd like to play a couple cool songs to go out, but I don't think you're gonna be able to hear them. So I'll leave off at 4:21, and when I see Dietrich again, I'll learn how to do some of the other nice little things, and then I'll start answering. But I get so into this stuff that it just, because I've lived this. I haven't lived it in the way of the Chinese guy having to suck shit out of a pail, and I haven't lived it in the way of someone been stuck up against the wall and shot. But I've lived it in terms of being verbally abused and denied the chance to express my conservative opinions when I was at college. And I want to win. I want to fight back and win. And that's what I'm doing. That's what motivated the founding of VNN. That what's motivating me to undergo the pain of trying to learn technology, which I'm not really that good at. And that's what we got to do to fight back against the totalitarian Jewish menace, the Jewish tyranny that now controls America. With that, thanks for listening, and I'll probably be back in a couple days, and I'll let you know on the forum, vnnforum.com. Thanks for listening. Bye.